Mr. Leland in Rail 16. So did you get tired of having to wait this human waste year?
Oh yeah. I'm afraid we didn't have any choice.
So you what else would you be fed on? What?
So I used to have I think there was some tins of rice. That was it, you know. When you're talking about something hot, something, that was the easiest thing. Under the way the cooks were, that's all I could do. I couldn't do anything else. Because they were never, half the time, they used to put the stuff down. And once we'd been fed, they used to pick it all up again. And that was it, you see. And
so yeah. In this reinforcement area, where were you actually, where were you accommodated? Were you in dugouts?
Well, we were the same as the others. We had, we had to sleep rough.
So what did that mean? What did that entail?
Well, I mean, sleep under the stars.
And would you be in, would you have dugout slit trenches or what?
Yeah, that was a thing. Because you see, I know we'd been on training exercises and that in England, but I mean, it's another thing to do that. It's another thing I'm going to do a slit trench for yourself, and especially with the sort of equipment that you were issued with to do it, which was a something and nothing thing. But that was all I was just a test of a little entrenching tool that they gave you, which was part of which was issued to you.
You thought that was inadequate?
Well, that was.
What was wrong with it?
Well, for a start, it was only a little. Wasn't a very big. You just used to have to hack away until such times you could dig yourself a hole to get into, as you might say. And that takes quite a bit of doing it when you've only got a small tool. Mm-hmm. If you had a good garden fork, that would be a different matter, you know.
So, at this stage, can you remember who the officers and NCOs who were with you at this stage were? I mean, was Bert Newman the quartermaster, was he around at this time, where you were?
Newman? Well, Newman was never that far behind. Newman was never that far behind the battalion lines. He was always within reach.
And were you? Do you think you were with him at this stage then, or in the same area?
We weren't that far from Newman. No, I wouldn't have thought he would have been. He was always within reach of. He was always within reach of the companies. Generally speaking, he was always within reach.
So who was your officer? Was it still Captain Ponder?
Well, so far as we were concerned, that was who. So far as we were concerned, I mean, there was just Captain Ponder, there was the CSM was Glover. Now, strangely enough, I suppose until Sedinane happened, Ponder was they were always there. But when, after, I got to jump forward a little bit because.
We can move back again.
Because, I mean, I'm talking now about my own, not just my position, but those like me who were there with Captain Ponder and Percy Glover, but they seemed. When we were called to reinforce the battalion, all of us, and now that, to me, that was a strange, well it wasn't strange, but because I knew it was all going to happen, but I mean, the strange part about it was that when that did happen, I never ever saw either Captain Ponder or Percy Glover and Wayne. Now, I just don't know why. I just don't know where they went. No, don't know. I've never heard of anything since, you know. I've asked the question. I've tried very hard to get in touch with Trevor. I knew where he lived. I knew Stratford in the East London. And I tried through the association. I never asked him about. I did ask him about, you know, Captain Ponder, but I never got an answer. And I never found out where they went. And when we were called into the companies, whether it be A, B, C, or D, that was it. They went. They went that way. I went that way. Someone else went that way. And I never saw them again. So I just haven't got a clue where they went. Although I have tried very hard to find out.
And this is after the Battle of Sedgenay.
After, yeah. Because you see, all not just one company, but all the companies were below strength. Were quite a bit below strength. They'd lost in some cases. They'd lost a sergeant major. They'd lost senior NCOs. Maybe lost officers as well. And they could do some reinforcements. So we didn't have many.
So about how many were you?
Well, I would not say. I couldn't put a figure on it. It was a drop in the ocean, really.
Less than 50.
Yeah, I would say 50 maximum. You know.
Right. So that's moved us forward a little bit. If we just move back again. You were just behind the front lines. Were you troubled by German aircraft at this stage?
Yeah.
Have you got any memories of that?
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Yeah, that was another thing, you see. The Germans were using the Stuka dive bombers at that stage. They were using them because they had the freedom of the sky. We had no Spitfires. We would have loved to have seen the Spitfire. But we never did, not there. And it was never likely that we didn't have any Spitfires, let's face it. We didn't have enough Spitfires to look after ourselves here. So, the Germans, there used to be quite a few of them about.
And how did they, what did they do?
Well, they were pretty deadly. The thing was that you were not only dropped a bomb or two with it on down, But they also had machine gunning as well.
Can you remember the first incident when you encountered the aircraft?
Yeah, when we were moving up, we were sort of moving up, and the line was moving up, and generally, like, and that's when they started to. They were using them then, They had plenty of dive bombers, and I could have, you know.
So did they hit any targets near where you were?
Oh yeah, they used to be used to get casualties from them.
Well, can you remember any incidents of that?
Well, used to get a lot of, as I say, but they were dive bombers, so they used to come down pretty low, and you used to get them in. If you were dug in, you know, you just had to take a chance. That's all there was to it. A lot of them were hit by the machine gun as well.
And so did you have casualties within the battalion?
Everybody did. Because he had the freedom of the sky.
What did you think about that, the fact that there wasn't the RAF didn't seem to be in evidence?
Well, it was like that for a long time.
Was there any resentment about
not that? Really. Not really, because I shouldn't think so, because most of us had been in England during the time when the Battle of Britain was on, and so therefore we knew what the state of the aircraft situation was, and we knew that we didn't have that many aircraft to spare. So we didn't expect that they were going to send several squadrons of Spitfires out to the desert or anywhere, you know. They just didn't have them to do that. So we knew that.
So you accepted it?
Well, we had to. We just had to, didn't we?
Have you got any kind of memories of specific incidents within the battalion of these German aircraft attacking you, and what your response was?
Well, what can you say? I mean, they used to see them coming down, and I mean, okay, you'd be getting your head down as much as you could, and all you could do was just empty a magazine and a brain gun, or fire a few rounds, and then hope. No, nobody ever hit anyone.
Did you try? Did you?
Well, I've tried, yeah. I've tried, yeah.
So how would your anti-aircraft defences be?
Would you have the brain gun, and maybe you'd have the 25-pounders. The 25-pounders, but then again, you see, the bombing is one thing, but dive bombing is another thing. I mean, this aircraft was pretty quick. They were down and up before you knew it, you know. So, I mean, it was a bit of a target, even for the 25 pounders.
Did you encounter any German prisoners at this stage?
Yeah, some. I found, well, I don't know how much I found, but I got the impression that majority of our time in North Africa, he was using a lot of Italian troops. We haven't got to forget that he was hand in glove with Mussolini, or Mussolini was hand in glove with him. I think it would be the fairest way. So there were a lot of Italian troops in North Africa, and I found that it seemed to me that there were quite a lot. There were quite a lot of Italian. I wouldn't say myself that they were trained as well as what the German troops were, but then again, you know, there were plenty of them.
And so you would see these men as prisoners at this stage?
Well, we had some. Oh, yes, some of them were. We found that some, you know, well, I dare say you've seen pictures or heard people talk about, seen maybe on the television, seeing them, all the lines of prisoners and all that sort of thing taken, you know, with shots during the war and that. But I mean, the Italians gave in a little bit quicker than what the Germans would, put it that way.
Well, was there any kind of news filtering back from the rifle companies, from their positions? I mean, because you had friends. Was the news kind of, were you in touch with what was going on with the rifle?
Well, we tried to keep in touch. We all tried. I mean, you know, that was, we did try to find out.
So what was from your point of view, what was the stories coming back?
We knew they were in trouble at Stedemane.
But before that, because apparently they had like several weeks where they were.
Yeah, we did. Yes. Yeah, we had. I think you mentioned two of those where they were in trouble on the hills. Yes.
But you didn't actually get up there at this stage yourself to have a look at any time.
No.
And were you able to keep in touch with the likes of Charles Bray and?
No, not really. Not. Personally, no.
So you just know that your friends were in the rifle company somewhere a little bit up the road?
Yeah, but the thing was, you see, that something had to happen. If something happened to any one of them, through one way or another, you would get to hear about it. Like a grapevine, really.
Can you remember the first casualties of the battalion had, the first battle casualties?
No, I wouldn't say, I can't remember them by name on the early ones, as I say. I can only talk from my own experience, and that was again, I've got to go just beyond Sedgenane for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I was in C Company.
Ah, well, we'll talk about that when we get there. So, as far as you're concerned, nothing really happened until Sedgenane.
Well, I think that was the first big thing.
And how did the news of that come? What was actually, from your point of view, what was actually going on at Sedgenane?
Well, we knew that we got to know that they were in trouble at Sedgenane, and we were put on alert straight away. We weren't that far behind them, but it filtered back to us, and we knew that they were in trouble. But the biggest thing was the fact that there were too many, too many warrant officers and NCOs and officers. You know, we were losing too many, and so we naturally thought that we were just waiting. We knew very well that we would go any time.
So you heard that the battalion sustained heavy casualties.
Yeah, we got that.
Did you actually get the story of what had actually happened?
No, not in detail. We weren't able to do that until we actually met up with somebody. Could have been anybody,
And how did that? Your own personal memories of that. Have you got any? Who you met up with and what had actually happened?
I didn't know about that. I didn't really get to know too many details about that until such times as I was put into C Company.
Could you just explain how that happened?
How it happened?
Yeah, you were told. Were you just told that you would be going to C Company?
Oh, well, I knew. I was told that. When we were told that we were going to go in to reinforce the companies generally, and so the whole lot of us went, everybody, and that's when I lost contact with Percy Glover and Captain Canada. All the rest of us went, and I don't know where they could have gone to any one of the companies, A, B, C or D, and it wasn't until I got to I was pushed in with a bunch that was put into C Company, and the first one I met in C Company that I didn't know him all that well, but I did know of him. I knew him in England. He was a sergeant, and I believe his name was Lawson, Sergeant Lawson. Joe Lawson, and they called him Holy Joe, because Joe Lawson was a religious type. Nothing wrong with Joe, but he was just had to be a religious type, and that was his nickname, Holy Joe. Anyway, he was the first one I saw, really, that. Apart from Pearson, I knew Pearson, and I'm not sure, but I think the first officer I met was a Major Balance. I think I'm not sure about that. I believe he was C Company Commander. I may be wrong about that, but his name is Balance, I know. And then there was another one who I was to meet later under D different circumstances, and that was Captain Mitchell. I remember his name, just Captain Mitchell. Anyway, that's when I went to the C Company.
So you went to C Company and you met Joe Larson.
Well,
what did he say? What did he? What was his?
Well, I recognised him. I recognised him. I thought to myself, well, I can remember seeing him in Winchelsea. I can remember there was something happened in Winchelsea once. Joe Lawson was involved in it somewhere or other. It was something to do with a regimental aid post. It was something to do with a special sick report that had gone through one Sunday or one. And for some reason or other, it's nothing to do with the RAP, Joe Lawson wasn't, but through this incident that I met Joe Lawson, I can't remember quite what it was. Anyway, I recognised Joe and I started to talk to him, and he told me, he started to tell me about one or two, and then Pearson turned up, and he said to me, Pearson came up to me, he said, as far as I know, he said, as far as I know, when we were sent to this battle, that's where we were sent to C Company, and I believe I was the only one who had a stripe. I'm pretty sure I was the only one who had a stripe. A person came up to me and he said, you'll be coming into C Company, he said. And he wasn't just talking to me, he was talking to all the others as well. And then he came to me and he said, how long have you had that stripe? So I told him, he said, you'll be a section commander, he said. And I'm pretty sure Lawson was there. I'm pretty sure he was there. Because he said, he turned around to Joe Lawson and told him that it was Joe Lawson who sort of told us where to go. And that was it. That was my first encounter with C Company as a company.
So what did Lawson say about what had happened?
Well, Lawson said that...
Because apparently they'd suffered very heavy casualties.
I did. You know, he had his... As I told you, he was a little bit on the religious side. And he was a bit sort of, well, what shall I say, a bit downhearted, really. And so it was. He wasn't at all happy. But he said, I don't know. He said, I don't know if we're going to get out of this lot. He said, we have to find something somewhere. He said, we had a bad time. And so he said, I think it's worse to come. And he was right as well, but still, he was, at least he tried to put it straight for me. He did what he could until Pearson turned up. But of course, nobody gave Pearson. If Pearson was in, Pearson was obviously coming to us. And so they naturally waited until he sort of came and had his say and then went off again.
What was your impression of Pearson?
Well, I knew Pearson better in England. He was never very popular. I'm not going to say that he wasn't a good Sergeant Major, he probably was. But he was never very popular. And I can remember somebody saying to me one day, up in Winchelsea, one of the few times I went to Winchelsea, I said, I reckon he'll be an officer before this war's over. And I was right and all. But anyway, no, he was a funny. I wouldn't have liked to have been in his company.
Was he noticeably stricter than the other side?
Well, he was in a strange sort of way. He somehow he seemed pretty confident about everything, but he had a strange manner with him. I don't know why. Sort of an overbearing sort of superior manner, you know.
Were the men afraid of him, do you think? Some men afraid of him?
Well, I think they were, to the extent that he was in a position to do a bit of damage. You see, he was always in a position to do that.
How do you think he had coped with Sergeant Aime? Because
I think he would have coped all right.
Because looking at the battalion history, I think he was the only survivor out of the rifle company sergeant majors.
Yes,
the only one of the four who survived.
Yeah.
So
I would think he would have been good. I would have thought so.
But also very lucky as well.
I should think so.
So how now that you were working with Pearson, was he a difference? Did you?
No, he was just the same as I remembered him in England. I remembered him. I knew him the same as everyone else knew him. He had this reputation, and he was never going to lose it.
And was he aware of? He was aware of his nickname and so on.
He knew. He didn't bother him. He was like Thompson. He had a goal, and he was going to get there.
So his ambition was well known.
Yeah. He knew very well that. He was going to go on, he was going to take a commission, and he was going to do all right. He was full of confidence, Pearson.
So, about how many men do you think were in C Company when you joined? How many were left?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really know. They were well down, I know that. All the platoons were down, you know. Well, we might have put a finger on it, really, but, you see, because the normal platoon would have been about 30, 36 strong, something like that. Well, you couldn't say that after Sergeant Aime, you'd have been lucky if you had 20, I reckon, you know, that in any one platoon I'm talking about, and that includes NCOs, by the way. I would have thought that it was pretty low.
So how did the battalion go about rebuilding itself? What happened from this time?
We didn't have any more reinforcements. All our spare men had been taken, so we had to start getting them from elsewhere, which is what happened. We got. In dribs and drabs, we got them from. We got them from there. Well, we got them from all over the place, really. Duke of Cornwall, Lanty Infantry, Coilies, we got them from. Some of the heavy infantry we got them from all over the place. We were the same as anyone else because, you know, they were sent out and a lot of them were coming from England and not necessarily from Durham. I mean, they could come from any depot in England, any regiment really.
So the battalion lost its northeast route, a lot of its northeast.
Well, to a large extent, I would think that Sergeant Aime. To a large extent, Sergeant Aime did the Durham routes. Yes, you know, you were not back to. Don't forget that when you're talking about the intake, I mean, a lot of that intake didn't all come from Durham, a lot of them came from Yorkshire as well, and Northumberland. But Yorkshire, there's a lot of Yorkshire then. We had a lot from here. We had some from the York Manx, and well, we just took them from anywhere, you know, that's how it was.
So, in C Company at this stage, did you fit in?
Well, I did my best. I did what Pearson has told me, and I said to Joe Lawson,